Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
I didn't have time to throw my headsets and storm out of the studio, so we're back. It's Joel, Barry, and Nick till 4 o'clock. We have one in the books, two to go. Mark Rolfing will join us, the longtime NBC golf analyst. Will talk to us about the Masters yesterday. We are wrapping up currently our one-hour diatribe on snakes and bugs.
It's funny how you
and
could
catfish.
Just... Yeah, it was just one little story of what happened this morning, and now somehow... We've gotten all the way to catfish noodling.
Yep.
And I just wanted to say that on the noodling, I was partially right. You actually stick your hand in the hole where the catfish is and wiggle your fingers to make it think it's worms. That was from Chris in Beaumont, because I was reading on it,
too. And they don't have teeth.
Apparently, they don't, but somebody said the spines will get you. They said that that's what hurts worse. Oh, here it is. This was Nick the Builder. He said, I'll take a normal-sized gator over noodling any day. Those catfish spines are agonizing. They don't have teeth to worry about, but those spines have venom, and it's not like just getting a shot. It's excruciating. That was Nick the Builder. And then, yeah, Chris in Beaumont said that when you noodle, you normally move your fingers around and make them think it's a worm. And I was looking at pictures of it, and you don't just sit on the banks. You actually get in the water. You literally – they're like shoulder deep, I guess, or they're – I don't know. It looks crazy. Needless to say, I'm not doing any of it.
No. It doesn't sound like that's a hobby.
Just give me a nice little Zebco.
Yeah, that's a hobby.
And an igloo full of beer, and I'll try to catch a catfish that way.
And by the way.
And yes, I know Zebco's a cheap. Save your
a
text.
A real?
Yeah. Save it. It was a joke, idiots. Yeah.
Okay, he's not Babe Winkleman.
Hey, look, a bunch of dudes just put their phone down. Okay, I was going to.
I just impressed him because I said, he's not Babe Winkleman, the expert fisherman.
Look at you.
But at the same time, I posted a video on my Facebook page, but there, I also have a buddy of mine, Juan, who has two kids. He uses the reel for another. He made a contraption with a baseball on the end of it. And he's a fisherman, mm-hmm. And he used a really strong test line. And he said he got so sick and tired of chasing all the balls that his kids were hitting. He sits in a lawn chair, and he dangles the ball in front of the kid, and the kid gets ready in his batting stance. And then right on impact, he hits the button on the reel to release, and the ball goes... And when it lands, he just reels it in and does it again.
That's pretty smart.
It's a pretty cool little contraption he's got there.
Yeah, that's pretty smart. Yeah,
my man Juan knows what he's doing.
All right, I just had to put a bow on the noodling thing.
Well, you sure you don't want to tie it again? Because guess who's on hold?
No. Go ahead. All right. It's all you.
Resident, take a break. Resident Rockets expert, self-proclaimed one-time basketball scout, and captain. I just said basketball. I'm sorry. Now you want to interrupt? See, when you start interrupting the host, that's when we have problems. And then on top of that.
You handle your business.
Are you also the president of the Russell Westbrook fan club, right?
If you need a brick, call Wessel Westbrook. He's going to give it to you.
There you have it. Kurt Lowe is on the show. What's up, my man? It's been a while.
Hey, what's going on? Joe, man, it's a pleasure being on your show, my friend. How you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you? Say hi to Barry.
No, it's cool.
Oh,
I don't want to talk to you now.
No,
too late now. I don't want to talk to you. It's Joel's show. You just go ahead. I'm just messing with you, man.
I'm a big fan of Joel. You know what I'm saying? When he was coming up, he was the Rockets, the man. He was the man for the Rockets, and he had all the stats that I was looking for, I couldn't find. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, so Joe's a stats guy.
Yeah,
Wait a minute.
He's a Maury guy.
Oh!
Turns out.
I just turned it all over to Barry. Colonel,
Joel
and
Maury.
You.
Hey, Joel Maury in his stats. Joel Luna. Oh.
I'm drawing a blank. I can't go on.
I thought so. Uh-huh. Now I know. Thank
Don't
you for this.
Bashful. He was the man.
I'm glad you called now, Curlo.
See, Curlo, that's the theme you should just stick with.
Don't be giving them insights and stuff.
Because now, I mean, that you don't get anything.
Because now, the next time he rips on me about stats,
I don't rip on you. I give you credit. You're our stat guy. And I didn't even call you a stat guy. I call you our analytics guy.
No, you call me, Daryl Morey.
No, I call you Barry Morey.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Curtlow, what's up? I know you're passionate, dude. You're like, so for people that don't know, Curtlow is very big on Twitter, but Curtlow has taken it all year personally, this Harden MVP thing. But now you're getting into it with OKC fans, and I'm worried about
man.
I mean, there's a lot of spats going on social media with you.
Yo, my blood pressure be going up every day. And it's not even talking to somebody. Somebody's just texting you, and your blood pressure going up. How the hell?
So that's what they texted? How in the hell?
No, that's what I texted them back. Leave me the hell alone.
Okay.
Now, I wanted to say, I had a bunch of that. I've been upset for the last 2 weeks, man. It's like they just giving the award to Russell Westbrook out there. You know, he's beating bad teams out there, you know what I'm saying, by 1 point. He's jumping over 7-footers to get rebounds. He's padding his stats, man. And we're so infatuated with this word triple-double. We're going to give him the MVP. Daryl Morey should be king because he's out there saying the same things I am, but in a better terms. You know what I'm saying? In the smarter, nerdy term, you know? But I'm just very upset because James Harden's done it all. He's winning. Understand this. When people say, you know what really gets me mad, Joe? When people say OKC is only 8 games away from Houston. Let me tell y'all something, man. Houston Rockets will be first place in the Eastern Conference right now. They're the third best team in the NBA, and OKC is the 10th. The 10th best team in the NBA. Who the hell gets the award for the 10th best team in the NBA? We just going to award people for being bad?
Now, Curtlow, can I ask you a question? Because I put you and Daryl on the same pedestal. I have you guys even in most every category in terms of your knowledge and the way you break down the game. But can I just ask you, here's the thing. The thing that's bothering me is that 2 years ago, Daryl was out there tweeting that wins don't matter. That's why James Harden should be the MVP, and he said it shouldn't be about just, you know, how many games the team won. It should have been about the individual performance. And now here we are 2 years later, and wins matter. Isn't that kind of hypocritical and contradictory to what he was saying 2 years ago?
I agree with you 100%. I'm not Daryl Morey.
You're
saying
close.
Whatever he says is what he – but what I'm going to explain to you right now is that 2015, Curry won – they made the argument that Curry won the MVP because his team was better than the Hornets, even though they were second in the West. You know what I mean? They beat the Spurs that year without Dwight Howard half the season. But they gave it to him because it was winning. He's got the same points for Grant. He's averaging this year. You know what I'm saying? Steph Curry. You know what I'm saying? When he won the MVP, you know? But they told him it was winning. So don't come back and tell him, hey, this year it's not about winning. It's about triple-doubles. You know what I'm saying? Harden, Daryl Morey, they have all kinds of the disrespect that they get 24-7. You know what I'm saying? And for them to put up a season like this, they should clear the whole award show. You told me, Joe, remember at the beginning of the season when I was so high on the Rockets, even when I was watching the preseason, you know what I'm saying? I said they're going to be a 4th or 15th team in the West. You laughed at me, remember? You know what I'm saying?
I'll go with it. All right.
This team deserves all the awards. Sixth man of the year, coach of the year, executive of the year. They're third in the West, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't. So Curtlow, but this is what I've been. But here, Curtlow, I don't disagree with that stuff because I think the owner should get the executive of the year. And I really believe D'Antonio's coach of the year. And I think one of the two guys should be sixth man of the year. But. Do you not feel with me that the Rockets fans should appreciate what they did this year and be focused on trying to make a long playoff run? It just seems like the fans are, I want to say disjointed, but they're too focused on this MVP race and not focused enough on let's get this team where it needs to go and worry about it making a deep playoff run. It's all intensively consuming this town right now.
Oh, I agree 100%. And you know what? That defense for the Rockets is going to get exposed in the playoffs when everything starts to slow down and it's a half-court game on defense. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So this Houston Rockets team is going to get exposed. And it's probably going to be by the Spurs because they're going to play them in the second round. I'm not too worried about OKC. That team, all they got to do is just put Patrick Beverley on Westbrook and let him figure it out. You know what I'm saying? We'll let everybody else beat it for him.
Well, look, I just want you to make sure you stay in your lane. But when you're fighting on social media, don't ever hide it and go on DMs because it's entertaining to watch it go back and forth. But don't tag Barry in them because
good Lord, don't.
You go crazy on some of the.
I can tell you right now, I don't want to be involved with any of that. I don't care. Oh, God, don't
talk
tag
talk about
me.
A passionate Rockets fan. I love Kurt Lowe.
All right, Kurt Lowe, you know what? Tag Barry.
I will block you.
Barry is funny.
I'll block you. I don't want to be involved in all that. I never liked the whole, like, coming up with a nickname off of somebody's name. I've always felt that's kind of childish. Like saying West Brick.
Yeah.
I've never been a big fan of that.
Well, you know what? You know what I like? I like guys that hit threes from Katy in Galveston. And I'm also a fan of Springer Dingers. All right, we're going to head to break because we got Mark Rolfing joining us next. In case you missed it, the Masters was yesterday. Sergio won his first major, and we've got a golf expert to talk about it and a whole lot more. We'll be back with the usual suspects right here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Welcome back to The Usual Suspects. It's Joel, Barry, and Nick. We are in studio on a Monday, the Monday after the Masters. And it is always great to talk golf if you're me. But the fact that the guys have, I don't know how to put this best, but you have relented to, or stepped back and allowed me to be in the glory of golf today.
Yeah,
and
you
I
should.
Appreciate that.
It's a big deal.
It was a fun tournament to watch yesterday. Because of the golf speak, we have Mark Rolfing on the line. Mark Rolfing, the longtime NBC analyst that you might know. Love listening to him on the air, but here's a guy that knows golf. And Mark, I appreciate you spending some time with us. Welcome to the show.
Oh, great being with you guys, and hello, everybody in Houston. Love your city.
I was going to say, I met you with Audrey Chang Trevino out at the tent at the Houston Open at the MD Anderson about a year ago, and it was a pleasure to meet you then, but it's always great to get you to talk some golf.
Well, good, and I'm glad they carved out some space for you to talk about the Masters, for crying out loud. It's Monday after the Masters.
They're very nice. They're generous guys. But with that being said, Mark, you watched the tournament, as we all did, but your take on Sergio finally breaking through as he had that moniker forever of the best player to never win a major, and just everything that transpired yesterday at Augusta.
Well, Sergio has done it really with an attitude adjustment. No, it was not even 4 years ago that you heard Sergio say, I can't win a major, I'm not good enough, I've had my chances, I've blown them, I get all the bad bounces, all the sort of woe is me. And Sergio has had a major attitude adjustment off the course. You know, his personal life is completely different. And, you know, we've all had a sense that things were building toward, you know, giving himself another opportunity. If you look at that round yesterday, it was really early in the second nine that he won the Masters. He could have made six or seven at the 10th. He made a five.
Yep.
Hit a horrible shot at 11, could have made six or seven, made a five. And then really hit the backbreaker off the 13th tee, could have made seven or eight there and made a five. So, yeah, he hit a wonderful shot at 15, but it was really saving and minimizing his mistakes early in the round that won that Masters for him.
No question about it. And one of the other things I was going to say is a lot of people, whether you believe in fate or you believe in a higher power, you believe in a lot of things, but you believe in the tradition that is the Masters. And what you saw yesterday, you mentioned 15. I mean, this is the third Spaniard to win a Masters green jacket. Behind Olazabal and Seve. It was Seve's 60th birthday yesterday, if he was still with us. And then on 15, the last guy in the final round to eagle 15 like that happened to be Olazabal. I just thought the clouds and the stars lined up, and what a great story everything was for Sergio to get that first win.
Really was. It actually, I think, started on Saturday. Seve was looking down as early as Saturday because Garcia hit a terrible second shot at 13 that landed on the bank and stayed there. You know, it could have gone in the water. He could have made a six there, and he ended up making a four. So, you know, the Seve effect was there. But this is exactly what golf needed. It needed a jolt like this. The ratings have been down over the last couple of months, typically on the Sundays. But everybody, I was at Augusta National yesterday, and I can tell you the majority of people were rooting for Garcia. And I think that's why people were so interested in that final round of the Masters. They finally had somebody that they wanted to root for to see win. You know, people aren't going to root for or against Justin Rose. But they did for Garcia.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it's the Tiger effect. And Tiger did so much to build up the ratings and the popularity of golf. And Dustin Johnson and Jordan Spieth and all the Jason Day and the guys that have had taken their turn at number one, and even Rory McIlroy, they've gotten some people that have been somewhat, you know, interested, but it hasn't even come close to what it's been with Tiger. So you say that Sergio could be kind of maybe jumpstarting a little of that as we go forward?
Well, I think so. You really need somewhat of a polarizing guy. If you think about the event that has really risen in the game of golf, it's the Ryder Cup. It's become probably the second most important tournament in golf now, the Ryder Cup. And it's because there's a rooting interest. And if you look at the other successful sports like football or baseball, you know, people have a rooting interest, whether it's a team that they're for, in Houston it's the Texans or the Astros, or they're betting on the games, or whatever it is, they have a rooting interest. Golf just inherently doesn't have that. And sometimes you need a polarizing situation, and I think Garcia is that.
Now, Barry and I were talking about this off air, but Sergio's reputation has kind of been up and down. I mean, I think amongst tour players, he's very well liked, but he has, you know, whether it be celebrating when he was coming down the stretch against Tiger, or some of the comments he made about, you know, off the cuff about Tiger and or what they were serving at dinner if they would get together. But can you kind of encapsulate for us just kind of that hot and cold attitude that Sergio has gotten from the fans in the past?
Yeah, I mean, it's been way more cold than hot. And I think part of it is because earlier in his career, Sergio was a whiner. And while we revere our athletic stars, most people don't like whiners. They don't want to hear guys, you know, that are making $5 or $10 million a year playing golf whining about it. And Sergio had a tendency to do that. He has completely changed. This is a totally new and improved Sergio Garcia. And it began a year ago or a year and a half ago, and I think people have embraced that. And they're seeing a player on the course that's smiling, and he's gotten the bounce back in his step. You know, people tend to think Sergio's an old guy. You would look at him or think to yourself, he must be in his mid-40s because he's been around so long. He's only 37 years old. And he's now starting to act like a younger man again, and the fans can gravitate toward that. They like that.
Mark Rolfing of NBC Sports joining us on the HRNP listener line, talking Masters after the big day yesterday. I got to ask you, Mark, because it almost reared its ugly head again yesterday, and I actually tweeted about it, but if you're that guy that's sitting on your couch in your boxers and you decide that you're a rules expert and you want to get involved, step away from the computer, go grab another beer, and just relax, because it was one thing when we saw it happen a couple weeks ago, a day after the event, but it almost happened again yesterday. What's your feeling on that when people really want to get that involved?
It's got to stop. There has to be a statute of limitations, and there has to be some control over how rules violations are caused. And unfortunately, I think it's going to have to be a situation in these bigger championships where, like the NFL or like the NBA or like Major League Baseball, we have an official in the television mobile unit or in some studio somewhere that is able to watch everything, review it, and make a decision on the spot. But I really believe that within 6 months, you are going to see some new local rule put into effect for the big events that do not allow that to occur. And I'm all for it. It's got to stop.
Oh, it was just, it agitated me to no end yesterday, especially in light of what happened a few weeks ago with Lexi Thompson. So, I mean, the question becomes then, because I had someone ask me before we went on the air, don't they have in the final round, especially in the top groups, a rules official that is walking the course with each group so that they can, like, I would assume if one guy's in trouble or he needs a drop, that happened a couple times in the final round, that someone is right there to be accessible quickly?
Some do, some don't. I don't know exactly how Augusta National does it. Typically, they have officials positioned in places on the course, but here's the problem. They're using their naked eye, just like the players are. And with high-def television and everything else, You're never going to have as good a view of whether a ball is moving or not moving with a naked eye as you're going to with television. So I think the way to view it and the way that it's going to have to be ruled on is probably from some central location, looking at it as high def. I just think, you know, the rest of the sporting world is kind of looking at golf and laughing and saying, what's wrong with you people that you're allowing after-the-fact rulings, you know, to be changed or called by viewers? It's just ridiculous. It's got to stop. The players are really mounting a front to get it stopped. So I think that's why you're going to see it happen.
One final thing, Mark, before I let you go. I know Tiger's resurfaced. He couldn't play. He wanted to play. It was the anniversary of his first Masters. But where are you in terms of, is he done? Is there anything that can salvage his health enough that he can make one final run at Jack's record? Or is this the end of the road for Tiger Woods?
I don't think it's the end of the road, and I don't think he can make any kind of a run at Jack's record. It is getting, first of all, harder and harder to win major championships. The equipment has leveled the playing field. There's more guys that can win every major. I think Tiger will play again. I think you'll see him back on the course this summer. Could he ever win a tournament? It would really take the stars all to align again for him to do it. I think it would happen at a place like Augusta before it would at some other courses, let's say, U.S. Open course or something like that. But it's going to be difficult for him. I don't think he's ready to give up his career yet, but he can certainly see the end of it.
Well, Mark, we appreciate you spending some time. We know you're busy. You can follow him at Mark Rolfing on Twitter. You can follow him on NBC Sports doing golf coverage. Again, Mark, thank you so much for joining us, and have a great week.
All right, thanks, guys.
Mark Rolfing right there from NBC Sports. That was good. That was on the Masters. And now you guys can go back to breathing again because now the golf talk is over. So we'll get back to much more show. We've got plenty more to get to. We got Rockets. We got Astros. We got a busy week with the Rockets wrapping up the regular season. They know who they're going to play in the playoffs. The Astros starting their first road trip of the year after some, shall we say, nail-biting but fun baseball over the weekend, both good and bad. So if you want to talk about it, please feel free to join us. 713-780-ESPN, that's 713-780-3776 on the HRNP listener line, or hit us up on Twitter. We're here till 4 ESPN 975.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 975.
Let's all go to the movie.
Take two, Mark.
And action.
The Usual Suspects present Monday Movie Moments with Trey.
King Kong ain't got sh** on me.
Funny like I'm a clown? I amuse you?
Then the first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir!
You call yourself a salesman, you son of a bitch?
It's that time again. Welcome back to The Usual Suspects. It is Monday Movie Moments with Trey. Pretty pumped about this one. This week we have Trey reenacting one of the most famous scenes in movie history, and it's from Goodfellas.
You're funny.
You mean, let me understand this. Because maybe it's me. Maybe I'm a little f***ed up, maybe. I'm funny how? I mean, funny. Funny like I'm a clown? I amuse you? I make you laugh? I'm here to f***ing amuse you? What do you mean, funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
You know how you tell a story.
No, I don't know. You said it. How do you know? You said I'm funny? How the f*** am I funny? What the f*** is so funny about me? Tell me. What's funny?
Get the f*** out of here, Tommy.
I almost had this f***ing guy.
The laugh at the end when he's trying to fit in is the best. Can you just roll that back just to where he laughs? I just want to hear him laugh again.
Get the f*** out of here, Tommy.
I almost had this.
You know, the best part about that was in the studio when there was no sound and it's just Trey going, ha ha! By himself, and he's like, was that okay? Was that all right? It's like, no, do it again, Trey. We had him doing a ton of time. All right, that's good enough. Yeah, you got it now. As I understand it, we have some outtakes as well.
We do.
I'd like to hear those, too. Sometimes those end up being better than the actual movie moment. Roll those.
What, am I funny? How am I funny? I don't know. You said it. How do I know? You said I'm funny. Ah, oh, damn it. Can I do that again? Yeah, I'm going to do that again.
Yeah.
Don't tweet that out.
I'm not. I'm deleting it. That was terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible. I agree.
You can be more gangster than that. And I know you can. You got that gangster in you.
I do? See, I almost had this guy. I don't really have a good Italian accent.
Well, why not? You can't do it at all? Be like, Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia. It's a slice of meatballa.
See?
That's racist.
It's not racist. It's an accent.
No, but it's racist.
How is doing that racist?
I don't want to offend any Italians. But...
Dude, you can't, talking like an Italian doesn't offend an Italian.
Are you sure? What if it's like trying to be funny in context? Like, wouldn't that make them mad?
Just talking like an Italian. It'd be like like a Sicilian.
How does a Sicilian talk?
Like an Italian.
So now I'm offending Sicilians too?
Yeah, the whole boot. You got the whole boot.
The whole boat, you mean?
No, the boot. Italy's shaped like a boot.
Oh. I didn't know Sicily was in...
Sicily isn't a place at all. It's Sicily. You added an extra su. Now you call them Sicily.
Sicily. Sicily.
Now you've developed dyslexia and a stutter.
I'm like a chameleon when it comes to mental illnesses. You know, like...
What? What do you mean? Hold on, before we continue, you're gonna have to explain this to me.
Like, you know, like how people say they have certain disorders and all that? Like, that's kind of what I do sometimes.
That's your thing?
No.
Just make them up as you go?
I actually have dyslexia.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Because I've noticed you say you have dyslexia, even when that's not really the problem.
Yeah, I know. That's Trey, you just ran over three people. What's wrong with you? I have dyslexia.
I thought I was only one.
Trey, you just killed somebody with a gun. What's wrong with you? I have dyslexia. What am I, funny? Funny to you? I almost had this f***ing guy.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Can I just tell you guys that getting in the studio with him to make these it's so much fun.
It's super entertaining.
You've been in there for a couple of them.
Yeah, like one or two. And they're incredibly entertaining.
He is. I'm telling you, that kid is funny. That's a funny dude.
I would argue this is the one time where the outtake, or not one time, maybe the second time where the outtakes is actually better than the actual
reading
bit.
Yeah.
But they're both funny.
What we've settled on, and this is just so everyone knows going forward, but what we've decided and hearing them all and reading the feedback is we've decided that the best movie moments are when Trey portrays an angry black man. We, you know, the training day, what was the other one that he did? Last week was the one that was the best one.
Yeah, the one I said it was the best one he had done so far.
No, last week's wasn't that
good. Or the week before last.
Yeah, last week's was Bull Durham. It was okay.
Yeah, Bull Durham was short.
It was before Bull Durham, yeah, because it was short last
week.
Yeah,
I don't remember, but when he's angry or an angry black man, either one. Because of training day. So, it was a Full Metal Jacket.
Yep.
But that's an angry white man. But when he's angry is when he's really
He's in character. Like the Italian accent, because he already had already defeated himself from the standpoint of he felt like he couldn't do the accent.
Yeah.
But in Full Metal Jacket, he was in character, so to speak, and he was all in. And that's what made it fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, he's we found his niche, though. We need him to be angry. Like, Mommy Dearest was pretty good, too. That was an angry white lady. So I think the key there, though, is angry. We've got to have Trey doing something angry.
Oh, I thought you were trying to say that.
Huh?
He was in his element too, with the angry white lady.
The whole I'm dyslexic, that literally, like, he'll tell you that. Like, when he couldn't figure out his left hand from his right hand, he didn't know his left from his right. And because he was reenacting Mommy Dearest, and he threw some paper towels, and he was like, I was like, dude, that was like so weak. He goes, yeah, I'm left-handed. I was like, that's your left hand. He goes, oh, it was? I'm dyslexic. I'm like, that's not what that means. Like, that's not what that means at all. No matter what he does, that's his excuse. I'm dyslexic.
Well, and then today you walked in, and he was talking for some reason or another about beer.
Yeah.
And he was like, when you go to a brewery. And he wasn't trying to do it. And I was like, a what? And everybody in the room was like, wait a minute, what did you do? He goes, brewery.
Did he say he was dyslexic? That's why he couldn't say
it. But he just, he's, I, I'm having, I think today I'm just having a problem somehow, some way with my R's. I don't know.
I like that he said he was a chameleon when it comes to mental disorders.
I just tweeted it. I'm like a chameleon when it comes to mental issues. Quote of the day, intern Trey.
So funny, dude. Hilarious. Oh, that's
good time. Ain't got shit on me.
He's really a great
You're right. Dude. The angry black guy, right. So, or angry anybody would be funny.
Yes. So we've had him do. We have. We're doing Pulp Fiction.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Samuel L.
See, he is doing Samuel L. I wanted him to do several Samuel L. Jackson, but it's hard to find good monologues. Like you have Snakes on a Plane, but it was really just the one line. It was like maybe two lines at the most where he was yelling, "I'm tired of these mother bleeping snakes." Like, that's just a couple lines. We need a monologue. So we're really trying to find some that we can make work.
I want him to do the courtroom scene from A Few Good Men.
I think you'll be disappointed in it.
You already did it?
I think what I've learned is, you know, it's got to be something where there's a lot of passion in the scene, but then it's, I don't know, I feel like...
If Michael can work his magic and get, like, Nicholson's responses in there and everything like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll try it. Certainly we can try it, but we had a whole bunch that we went in there with, and we just started going, nah, this doesn't work. We need to start being more picky with them.
Got it.
Is the thing. And then, by the way, I got a couple texts asking about UFC and the Musasi Weidman fight, and we'll talk about that next segment, just so you guys, if you're looking for that.
Get into it and then leave it in my lap. All right. Yeah. Speaking of a few good men, I want to tell you right now about Josh Pesikoff and his staff, good men and women, over at Infuse Energy. Infuse Energy, a locally owned and operated energy company that is really focused on making sure you are taken care of with all your needs and your energy usage, whether it be for a business or for your own personal use. InfuseEnergy.com, 844-INFUSE2. All you got to do is call or reach out to them, and they will have a customer service representative standing by that's going to make a plan that is tailor-made for your usage, whether it be for your business or for your family. And the fact is that most energy companies out there today, they're trying to get you to buy into and sign on to a rate and a plan that benefits them, a higher interest rate, a higher percentage rate based on when they want to get the energy to you, when it works best for them, when the contract expires, the rate goes way up. They don't work that way. And they don't use an automated system when you have a customer service issue. You call, you get someone on the phone that's going to be focused on trying to help you. That's the way Josh and his company do business. They're 100% green energy at your fingertips. You sign up, you choose a green plan. It offsets your electricity use with renewable energy credits. That helps decrease your carbon footprint. So that's good. But what's better is they're not in it to screw you over or jerk you around to make a buck. It's your relationship with them that means the most. They're going to make 100% honest with you. They're going to make a plan that fits you. And if it ever doesn't fit you, you talk to them. They try to do their best to reshuffle the deck to make sure you get a plan that works. It's infuseenergy.com, 844-INFUSE2. That's 844-463-8732. Tell them you heard it on ESPN 97.5. Right off the top, you get a $25 bill credit. And I'm telling you what I've been telling you all along. Josh Pesikoff and his company will take care of you at Infuse Energy.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
The beauty of the outtakes of Trey and commercial breaks with the usual suspects. We do have fun. We should have cameras in here. We really should.
Lots of texts and tweets enjoyed this week. I'm glad to hear that. That's a good thing. Yeah. Again, the outtakes sometimes make the whole thing. I mean, he was good because sometimes it's bad, and his Italian accent was pretty terrible,
right?
Or his Sicilian.
That was the best part.
That was great.
He couldn't say Sicily.
He can't say brewery. And brewery.
Yeah, Sicilian. Lots of ideas, and some of them we already have, so we're looking good. A couple people said like Black Snake Moan, Hateful Eight. So yeah, we'll get some of that in the can as well. These are all good suggestions.
Yeah, and by the way...
We did get somebody suggest yours, too, A Few Good Men.
Okay.
So I guess we'll have to try it.
We've had suggestions coming in for quite a while that we had a list going for a while. Yeah. So, yeah. Should be no surprise to anyone. Trey had a great weekend because he went to the NASCAR race. at Texas Motor Speedway.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, so that was that is what Trey enjoys.
He does. He loves does. Him some NASCAR.
He has the actual numbers on the car.
Does he have numbers on the car, really?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. There's some on the sides, and then there's a whole bunch on the
back. That's
literally
the NASCAR version of wearing a jersey. That's literally putting numbers on your car.
Well, and then you're NASCAR wearing your, Cruz, your Jose Cruz shirt today.
Yes,
a badass throwback Jose Cruz t-shirt.
Yes.
And Trey looks at it and goes, hey, I got to... Do you have a J.R. Richards shirt? Because I got to get a J.R. Richards shirt. And I go, no, Trey, you need to get a jersey and wear it in front of Barry. He's like, really? Why? I go, don't ask questions. Just do it.
Yeah.
You would really
I didn't know Sicily was in.
So Sicily isn't a place at all. It's Sicily. You added an extra sus. Now you call them Sicily.
Sicily. God love him.
He is one of a kind, and we love him.
He is.
There is no doubt about it. Salvatore on Twitter says, as an Italian, that was funny, needs more eggplant.
Yeah, for real. For real.
That is some great stuff.
What are the others? We've got Samuel L. Jackson monologue in Kingsman. I don't even know if I've seen Kingsman. Huey Lewis scene from American Psycho. I don't know what that is, but I've marked it down. Hateful Eight and Django. It's going to be tough to get him to do Hateful Eight or Django. I wanted him to do Django, but I'm worried because he's very sensitive about offending people.
Yes,
like,
he is.
He doesn't want to offend anyone, and so it's going to be really difficult to get him to do that.
I can't think of a scene off the top of my head, but I would imagine there's a scene in American Psycho that he could definitely
out the park. We've gotten that suggestion a couple times, and someone said a Green Mile, and I looked at some monologues from a Green Mile, but they're all very mellow. We need angry.
Well, can I ask you a question? Do you think he could do Doc Holliday in Tombstone and try and do that accent?
Yeah, but I don't think it would be... I think it would be...
forced?
Disappointing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And somebody texted, is intern Trey and Juggalo Trey the same person?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We just don't... Sometimes Juggalo sounds... He is who he is.
Probably the way I tweeted it, because I didn't put Trey. I just mentioned his hand.
Yeah, I think he got that from AJ. Said he looked like a Juggalo. I think that was at Rock the Mic. I think that's how that stuck around.
Really?
AJ said he looked like a Juggalo during one of the Rock the Mic contests, and that has stuck. And that was before he was an intern, so... you want me to go ahead and get this UFC stuff out of the way?
Ahead, sure.
I don't want to bore you. But somebody had texted and asked my thoughts on the Musasi Weidman fight and the stoppage. And it's the first of all, if you watched it, the fight was stopped because there was a controversy over whether there was an illegal knee or not, whether Chris Weidman was considered a downed opponent. So there was a stoppage, and Chris Weidman actually ended up losing the fight because of the stoppage. And the way it went down is Musasi had him kind of in an awkward position where he was bent over, and he had one hand on the ground and his other hand was not on the ground. And the way it works in MMA is if you have two hands on the ground, you're considered down, and you can't knee the head of a downed opponent in MMA. That rule is changing now, where if it used to be one hand was considered down. But now you have to have both hands on the ground. Musasi kneed Weidman in the head, but he only had one hand down. But it was very close. And then Weidman puts both hands down to stop another knee from landing on his head. And when he did that, Musasi kind of pulled his hand off the ground at the same time he landed a knee. So it wasn't illegal, but Dan Mergliotta, the referee, thought it was illegal and stopped the fight. And when you stop a fight because of an illegal knee to a downed opponent, that opponent gets 5 minutes. In my opinion, Weidman was kind of hamming it up a little bit. Like, he was overly hurt. Like, he was extra hurt because of the knee. And it looked like he was trying to just buy some time. Like, he was just trying to, recuperate and regain some energy or whatever he was trying to do. But it didn't seem like he was legitimately injured. And I could be wrong. I don't want to, But it just didn't come off as completely sincere. And again, I might be wrong. Who knows? But the strange part is the doctor comes in and starts talking to him. And while the doctor's talking to Weidman, Dan Mergliotta, the referee, goes over to somebody with video and says, hey, can you check and see was it illegal or not? Now, they do not have replay in New York in MMA. So you can't take what you see on the video and reverse a call. But the person said, yes, it was legal. His hand was off the ground both times. But it was that close, and Mergliotta stopped it because you couldn't tell by the naked eye. So Mergliotta goes back over and tells Weidman, it was legal, but you still get your 5 minutes. So Weidman's taking the 5 minutes. The doctor's asking him some questions. The questions can't be answered by Weidman, and the doctor stops the fight. Well, while Weidman was taking his 5 minutes, the referee went over to Musasi and said, I'm not going to deduct any points, but this is your warning for an illegal knee. So at that point, there's considered no foul. And when the doctor stopped the fight, because there was no foul, Weidman lost because he couldn't continue. So crazy turn of events. Now, to analyze it, essentially, Dan Mergliotta did the right thing. Joe Rogan was killing him on the broadcast, saying that he shouldn't have stopped the fight and he should have started it once he found out that the knee wasn't illegal. The problem is there's no replay, so you can't. If you've stopped it for an illegal knee, you have to keep it stopped and give him his 5 minutes no matter what. And the fact that it was so close, Dan Mergliotta did the right thing by stopping the fight. I mean, it was literally milliseconds between the hand coming up and the knee landing. You could see it on replay, and that's where New York needs to get their stuff together and allow replay. Because allowing replay in that fight would have fixed everything. But as it stood, basically what would have happened is Mergliotta would have went over while he stopped the fight because he thought it was illegal. Someone would have said, nope, it's legal. And then he would have said, all right, it's legal, fight. And put him right back in the same position, and they would have started again. But it ended up hurting Weidman and costing him the fight. So very strange turn of events. But just shows you that even sports like MMA could use replay. And there's cases where...
And I totally agree with you on that. The human eye is not going to catch that.
No.
It's way too hard for him to be that reactive that quickly.
Yeah, and he did the right thing by stopping. Because if it was so close, I actually thought it was illegal myself. And it was so close that he should have stopped it. And he did the right thing. So yeah, it was a very weird turn of events and a very weird fight. But yeah, Weidman actually, what he did backfired and screwed himself. So.
I think next time they should allow people watching at home to call in.
See, that's a great point,
like golf,
Joel.
Right?
Yeah,
right,
that's a great point.
Just like golf.
That's what pissed me off about that is nobody's at home calling in and going, oh, that was an illegal knee. You need to reverse the decision and the fight. That doesn't happen. Only in stupid golf.
You should have seen Lisa too, because she's just the bandages are all over. She's just the pain medication hasn't kicked in yet. And I go back to watching where I left off the Masters, and I see the idiot that they're reviewing it because some idiot. And I start going, "Are you kidding me?" Screaming yet? She goes, "What are you even talking about?" And I'm like, I go, "Never mind. First of all, with the mood you're in and the pain meds haven't kicked in yet, let me tell you in about an hour when the codeine kicks in, and then you'll just be like, oh, okay, and we can move on with our day." Right now, I want to tell you guys about the Houston Cans Cars for Kids program. I've been telling you about them for quite a while. It's a great locally owned and operated program that helps the kids of Houston, Texas have a second chance at an education, and it's all because of your donations. If you're looking around your yard or your garage or somewhere in your possession, you know of a clunker, whether it's working or not, just collecting rust and dust, a motorcycle, a truck, a car, a trailer, an RV, or a boat, anything like that, and you want to donate it, it'll go to a good cause, and that is the Houston Cans Cars for Kids program. All you got to do is call 713-225-4226 or log on to HoustonCarsForKids.com. Let them know what you got. They're going to come in. They're going to do the rest. They do the paperwork. They bring a tow truck. They take away the vehicle. They give you a great tax deduction. And if that isn't good enough, you get to know the feeling that after you give up the vehicle, that it's making a difference in the lives of kids trying to get an education. Because from there, the Cars for Kids people use that donation, and it translates into book money, eyeglass money, bus fare, warm meals, you name it. If it's something that's been distracting a kid when he's trying to get an education, that donation will be used to try and keep those kids on the straight path to getting an education. It's the Houston Cans Cars for Kids program, 713-225-4226 or HoustonCarsForKids.com. Make a donation because, as always, right off the car, not the kid.
ESPN
97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.